Beatrice Manning from the Division of Management, Policy, and Community Health at the School of Public Health, University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. She has worked in health economics and policy in both the public and private sectors, and while working for the pharmaceutical company Schering Plough, she became a whistleblower and recovered $350 million for Medicaid and other public health programs, and she has testified before the U.S. Senate about Medicaid fraud by pharmaceutical companies. Dr. Manning.
Oh. Hi, I actually, because of some of my introduction, do have some, quote, conflicts of interest. One, Schering Plough did not manage to fire me quite fast enough, so I got 5 years and a few months making my pension vested, and I get actually a full amount of $308 per month from Schering Plough. So I wanted you to know that. Yes, you should cheer that. And also, as I look at what's in my retirement benefits, which I do not manage, and I would guess that any of us who have Taya Krepp and other things, we own pharma stock. And so I put that, and I do, so I put that out there, and I also see this as sort of an insidious way that we're all being dragged into drug companies, but also corporate capitalism just in general. When I did this, I thought, well, this will be not that hard to do some empirical research. I'll just look up the people that are on advisory committees to defining illnesses and see what their connections are. And indeed, as I started doing this, I realized there were even more and more connections. And so I'm going to look at really just the first three of these. There's, in terms of drugs, I think there are three big corporate players. One are clearly health insurance companies, which I'm not going to talk about. But I am going to talk about medical equipment companies and pharmaceutical companies. And seeing I'm looking at three diseases, and two of them are hypercholesterolemia and osteoporosis, I found it very interesting when I sort of looked at the advisory panels that defined the diseases and the times at which they should be treated. They also included major people from major food corporations, and I'll mention that a couple more times. We have, for better or worse, and this isn't meant to be a criticism of them, a payment system that is based on groupings and definitions. And each of these DRGs and hospitals, ICD-9 and for codes and DMS for mental health, so that the definition of these diseases becomes very important in terms of what even gets to be a disease that you could get paid for or get your drug reimbursed for. And this level of interest by pharmaceutical companies I consider even more insidious than just their use my drug when you have something, but they're now defining what you have, yes. So, and I would also say that as long as we have drug companies and medical equipment companies that operate in the market system, simply making everyday business decisions is going to involve several things that would define the categories for what's an illness and when you should start treating it. And these are just, and if you ever worked in a drug company, no one would dispute these. You got to make sure that everything you can measure, if you work for, has an ICD-9 code. And any procedure that you might have equipment for or drug for, you want it defined as a disease which can get reimbursement. Also, if you're a medical equipment maker, you want to minimize the time between screenings. For instance, has your osteoporosis or osteopenia got any worse? How often should we check that? You also want to make sure that you maximize the length of time that you should have screenings. And I think we can see that some of the best examples are in some of the breast cancer screenings when the bottom ages were cut off, the outcry, and do not doubt that drug companies had much to do with that outcry and organizing patients. And finally, if you're a medical equipment company, you want to continue to refine what you can measure, such as how well you measure the density of bones or MRIs or open MRIs, so that it is almost not that much different than my iPhone, where we can expect an upgrade. And if you are a large physician's office or a hospital, it would be best that you have it. And this is simply a business model that if you as a company don't do, some other company will do, and you will be out of business. And I do believe that. Now, what's the rational business policy for pharmaceutical firms? You ensure that everything you can possibly treat is a disease. It has a code. You can charge for it. Your drug will be reimbursed. It's also generally better to get your diseases approved one at a time. Get anything you can get approved first, and I think Don referred to this, and then keep adding to the categories that your drug might treat. And this also helps just in patent planning that you can, if you can continue to increase the list that this is good for, you can make up on volume some of what you might lose when it's off patent. You should also ensure that treatment guidelines suggest treatment at the earliest possible time. And we can think about the quote borderline, which there are at least some physicians who still maintain that that's not a disease, but it's a borderline. But we now see it as almost good to treat as early as possible. And you should also ensure that people use your medication for absolutely as long as possible. And I think this really clicks in with some of the stuff that Don talked about, that is the least likely thing to have been tested at all, long-term side effects. Now, we also have an ideology, which I think even some of us in public health buy into, that supports this type of approach. It's measurable. In fact, there are people, at least in my stat classes, who said, if it's not measurable, it doesn't exist. And so that totally plays into the measuring of bone density. It's more scientific. We're not just saying your bone broke. We're saying, what is the actual level that it has? We can pretend this is scientific. And we can also have the ideology of prevention. And prevention has taken on this twist in its definition, such that prevention means start treating as early as possible. And I think that comes into things like hypercholesterolemia and osteoporosis, which are two diseases I'm going to look at a little bit. But there's many others on that list, and we're pretending it's primary prevention if we start giving drugs before you even have the disease yet. So there's an ideology that has been hammered, I would say very inappropriately, but has been hammered to fit the business goals of large corporations. Now, one of the things I'm going to talk about is looking at who's on the panels that define diseases. And I'm going to look at three. One, and the first is mental health. And I think that things are set up well so people, you can get more patients. But it was also one of the easiest things to do some research on because I would say in this case, to their credit, the American Psychiatric Association has asked that members of their panels say what their interests are. And at least among the panel that's working on the next version of DSMs, 69% have some financial ties to the industry. And by this, I don't mean they have this in their portfolios as some retirement investment. I mean that they get directly research funding, they've acted as consultants to the company, or they get honorariums as speakers. And the research funding is now up to 42% of the people at any of the panels get research funding. And also 50% are in more than one of these categories. I would also point out that these are categories that you always have to renew. So your tie has some kick to it. You can see the rest. It's an increase from DSM-4, and 75% of the work groups have a majority of their panel members with those kinds of direct ties to drug companies. Now, I wanted to look a little bit, and it's not because of the specific types here, but I want you to relate to what's on the board where the new drugs are. The ones with greater influence from DSM, by the way, the 25%, that's what DSM-4, and now when it's 2, that's 2 DSM-5. Dementia has jumped from 25% of their panel to 89% of their panel, and I invite us to think about the new drugs that are on patent for things like Alzheimer's. Sleep disorders has taken a major jump, and I would say if it stays like it is for DSM-5, which is expected to come out in 2013, it now includes things like restless leg syndrome. And those are now sleep disorders for which we can define a drug. So I invite you to think about these not in terms of just the area, but in terms of what's happening in drug companies. Areas where there's been a decrease in drug company. If you look at the percentages, I would hardly call them a big decrease, but we can recall that most of the anti-anxiety drugs are now off patent. Most of the SSRIs, mood disorders, are off patent. Areas that have stayed the same, and you can see the difference. There used to be a category called disorders diagnosed in childhood, and we can see that went down overall, but there are now going to be two categories, and we can see ADHD, which we know its epidemic rise, has nearly 80%. I just want to quickly move on to changes in osteoporosis. I know I'm old enough, so I talk about the 1990s as not too long ago. But in the 1990s, osteoporosis was mainly a fairly old person's disease, and it was diagnosed when you had some crumbling, painful crumbling of your spine. It's now measured. It's measured by bone density tests, and it's defined totally statistically. You have osteoporosis if your bone density is more than two standard deviations below the mean of women in their 30s. And if I'm remembering my stat right, that's at least 1%, even without the age difference. And osteopenia is below one standard deviation, which I think gets us about 15% more. So we've now had a definition statistically. I'll go through these quickly, seeing I'm paying attention to the, but we can see the tremendous jump in the number of people meeting osteoporosis and osteopenia. If we get over 70, it's nearly half. There's recommendations for treatment. There's recommendations for testing. We give, now finding the composition of the International Osteoporosis Foundation, I am still working on that because you have to, first you find the list of names, then you have to trace them down. And if it's someone in Belgium and France, that gets harder and harder. But of the U.S. members of it, there are 6 out of 14. The chair of the U.S. Preventive Medicines Task Force gets funding from Kraft and Procter & Gamble's. I'm just quickly going to go to high cholesterol. 8 out of 9 members have financial interests, and they're defined in the same way I did. They're not some far away. They're right up into your research funding. And what I'm going to suggest at the end is disclosure has sort of become like we warn people when they have tests, and then you knew it, so why didn't you just pay attention to it? And I really think we have to move our discussion, and seeing this is a socialist caucus, I'm saying this right out loud, we really have to move our discussion to, are we going to get, quote, good drugs? Are we going to get the drugs we need if that continues to be a market-driven, that's how they're developed? And I'm saying moving away from this might not result in anything all that bad because, as Don said, most new drugs Big Pharma buys anyway. So I think that the argument, even from the best capitalist, would be that I think development will continue to take place without the ability to make massive profit.